Welcome to Product-Led Growth Leaders, where we learn about the bold path of building digital products that sell themselves. Let's listen to product leaders who can give us a glimpse into the innovative thinking process. Showcasing and celebrating these awesome folks, I'm your host, UX and product design veteran, Thomas Watkins. Welcome to Product-Led Growth Leaders. I've got a great guest for the show today, Bill Dillmeyer. He is a startup finance leader. He's raised over $200 million. He does Series A to C and unicorn scaling. He specializes in go-to-market and revenue strategy. He's an investor, a speaker, a mentor, and a fractional CFO and CEO. I've had the pleasure of sharing a panel presentation with him a little bit over a month ago in Austin. So I'm excited about this conversation today. Bill, welcome to the show.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here, Tom. So good to see you again and look forward to what's coming up next.
Yeah, likewise. So starting off, finishing up with you, I gave that introduction. Is there anything else you'd like to add to that to help the audience understand where you fit in the ecosystem of things? And
no, that's such a great question because I've been super fortunate over my career to wear a lot of different hats. So I've run finance, strategy, operations. I've been like a finance business partner where I've had five different people that I report to, like head of sales, head of marketing, head of product. So for me, it's really about coming in and understanding the business and then figuring out where I can add the most amount of value to go ahead and move it forward, as well as the inevitable question of fundraising and helping companies be really thoughtful and strategic about who their target ICP is from a fundraising perspective and helping them be successful.
Yeah, thinking specifically about early stage startups, would you say that's most of your work?
Correct.
So early startups and scale-ups, but like on the earlier stage part. In that landscape, and so much changes over the years, and we are where we are today with the way things are, what do you think are some of the relevant areas that founders should be thinking about, whether it's the evergreen issues that have always been there or like the new ones?
For me, one of the first questions that I ask every founder, and it's a really simple question, but it's such an enlightening question, is what are you good at? Are you a sales founder? Are you a technical founder? Are you a podium speaker evangelist? I want to know what you are not good at so I can come in and help you understand like where I can help show you some ways around blind spots or help you not fall into some traps that folks fall into. So that's really where I anchor. And then from there, it's once that's defined, it's how can we build a team to go ahead and support you? So I'm working with a really smart technologist. He's 28. He's former engineer at Lockheed, worked on the F-35. He could go for hours about AI and nuances. You ask him about go-to-market strategy. You ask him about how do I cultivate a campaign for marketing? And that's really where he'll very thoughtfully say, I don't know, help me fill that in. So for me, it's always about being willing to put yourself out there and say, I'm a founder, but I don't know.
Yeah. And now that you're saying that, I do think that's universal, especially with working with startups as a design consultant. I come in and say, okay, what are their gaps? What are the major goals? And what are the true things that need to be filled in ASAP in order for them to start being successful at this? Let's get into some of the, I guess maybe focusing on the financial hat for now, but you wear, of course, a few different hats. What are, in terms of goals that founders have, and if we think about the different I want to raise, or first of all, are you primarily thinking about raising versus becoming lucrative, or just the whole financial shebang?
For me, it's a full long-term strategy. So it might actually start with bootstrapping and then thinking about how do I raise. And I always tell people it's easy to raise money. The obligation that comes with that and the responsibility to your investors is really the most important thing. And how many times have you seen people tout, oh, I just got a round for $1 million, and they never raise again because they failed to deliver on the promises that they set out for their investors. So a lot of the folks that I'm working with now, and this is very common when we go in and talk to investors, they're like, first question is, okay, what's your traction? And I want to see your marketing traction, who's paying, how many customers are in your funnel, how have you gone ahead and cultivated that? And the other side of traction is, what's on your technology roadmap to continue to make that a sustainable journey for your customer? If you can't answer those two questions succinctly, those meetings with investors shut down very quickly.
Okay, so you actually will suggest a lot of the time that, hey, look, I think your bootstrapping is the smarter thing to do at this point in time. That is a
Oh, yeah, very much. And for right now in the environment where cash is at times hard to come by, depending on the niche you're in. Like everyone likes to say they're an AI company. We've seen it. Are you an AI wrapper? Are you really developing proprietary AI? And not to knock the wrapper people, and they've actually been funded, but at the end of the day, what is the common word that people come back to now? It's like, what's your moat? What's defensible? How can you not get knocked off? And in order to do that, you need to bring a product to market and solve what I like to call problem market fit. So many people fix it on product market fit. Let's change that first P to problem. And are you honestly solving a problem? Like you could build a company that's like Uber for cats, but who would use it? Or would there be a market for it?
Okay, so let's double click on that a little bit and appreciate the difference between the two mentalities of PMF potentially, right? Is that, would you say that's similar to the dichotomy of when people say fall in love with the problem, not fall in love with the solution?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. You have to demonstrate that you are solving a needed problem in the marketplace before anyone will say, hey, that's a really cool solution. And going ahead and getting that right, doing tons of customer discovery is going to be the first unlock. And if you don't talk to at least 100 people, you're probably doing yourself an injustice and putting yourself in harm's way when it comes to your startup.
What do you say to people who think that validation is something they don't have time for and they think they see it as a time and resource and extent intensive activity?
I tell them that their quote startup is going to be incredibly short-lived and they should be thinking about plan B. And if you can't talk to enough people, and don't talk to your grandma, don't talk to, people that you know and think that you're awesome, be ready to talk to strangers, be ready to go into a conversation where you're cultivating an audience of potential customers to be able to talk about features. And you can do it over a beer, you can do it over a coffee, but it's very much of a find a thought leader in that space. And at the end of the day, look at it this way. If I want you to buy my product, that means you're not going to spend money on somebody else's product or something else. How do I go ahead and convince you that there's a value prop in what I'm delivering as even a concept?
Yeah, this is so interesting because there's like effective ways that I've seen that being done. I'm curious as to whether you have any favorite methods around that. For example, some of the startups I've seen successfully do it is having a product advisory board. And then one particular one I'm thinking of, they're just developing a software for engineers, a very specialized type of engineer. And they gathered people of this job role type. Brought them in, give them equity, and said, okay, we want to check in with you every so often. We're going to show you concepts and designs and things that we haven't built yet. And we want you to just give us the brutal feedback. And they're incentivized to give brutal feedback because all they've got with is equity. And why should I try? And I'm not your friend. So I don't need to tell you things and butter you up. And we found that to be a good way to get just brutal feedback that was specific. And around what would make you an actual buyer of this? Not here's a screen, what do you think of it? But what will actually fill a need for you? So I'm curious as to if you have any favorite methods that you've seen be effective.
I love the idea of the product advisory board, and it's both pre and ongoing once that product comes out because you're doing sprints. You're probably trying to drop delighters every, what, 4 to 6 weeks from a sprint cycle. So being able to check in with those people. The other way to do it, and this is a concept that I've been really fascinated by, is actually building marketing campaigns and trying to build lead hooks where you actually start putting messaging out about, hey, how can I solve problem X? Or would you be interested in a problem that or a product that does X, Y, and Z? And then from there, you can almost reverse engineer and crowdsource ideas based on the click-through rate. There were people doing it as like a, I think the term was VSL, like a video sales letter, and being able to almost game the system where you really don't drive any code until you get enough people to say, yes, this is an idea. And then with the emergence of vibe tools, you can actually go out and build some pretty fast prototypes to get feedback. So that's the other way that if you're willing to stand up something in relatively short order, that's a very binary way to get that feedback that you're looking for.
Yeah, it's a similar method. I think it might even be the same as the second thing you've mentioned, is this one they call pre-totype. So prototype, but it's like a pre-prototype. And you just stand up something that doesn't take a whole lot of energy and effort to build. And then somehow the click-through that leads to some feedback from people who are interested in this. So you can see, are they interested? Would they buy it? And what might be missing from it? Yeah, one of the things I get interested in about all of this is how this relates to the Gartner hype cycle. When you mentioned everyone's AI nowadays, but is it real core IP AI, or is it like an AI LLM wrapper or something like that? And do you think that there's like a time latency to where there's something becomes exciting and there's a certain amount of time that people have to fool VCs who are just excited but haven't learned? And you get a first generation in maybe 2003 when ChatGPT first drops, who threw a lot of money into LLM wrappers. And then the next year, they're like, maybe I shouldn't have jumped into these two dozen different wrappers. I'm concerned about their ability to be profitable. And so the time latency, is that something that you think about from a financial and just a strategic perspective? Or how does that play into your work or your thinking?
Now, that's such a great question because AI has really accelerated the pace in which people can, like you said, develop product, think about product. And a lot of folks that I'm talking to now are like, where's AI going to be in 6 months, 8 months, a year? And it's almost like old school when you were developing computer chips, you weren't developing code for the computer chip that was the fastest, you were building for the next gen of computer chip. So right now, there has been a lot of hype and early hype, and look at the VC firms that have really gone all in and over-invested in the AI space. It's almost like that notion of the diffusion of innovation or crossing the chasm or the tipping point from Malcolm Gladwell. It's like, which one of these is going to stick enough to get me to where I want to be? And right now, I think the jury's still out. And a lot of founders that I'm talking to are like, if you are an entry-level engineer, if you came out of any reputable school with a degree in computer science, you're going to have a really hard time getting hired because companies are not hiring entry-level because AI is knocking out years one through years three. So now the question is, okay, how do I bulletproof myself, my career, so that I might be 3 years, 4 years out on the curve before AI comes in, largely automates what I do? I saw a statistic that was absolutely crazy, was like 70% of code at Amazon is written by AI and their agents. Just
Wow.
think about how many engineers Amazon would hire, and look at the layoffs at Microsoft, not necessarily the one in July, but the one before that, where they're really looking at where you're seeing great degrees of automation. So I think it's a huge fundamental factor of not only where are we going to be today, but is what you're building now even going to be a viable product in.
Yeah. Yeah, how does that relate to what VCs want? This kind of leads into another area of questions I'd like to pick your brain about. So Let's go to the, because there's VCs being interested in what you're building and then also like how you're running the team. So we'll go to the how you're running the team part since we touched on that. So we've seen big public cases where Musk slashes 80% of a workforce and Twitter did go downhill, but a lot of people didn't notice that the technology went downhill and then other companies slash. So I can see there being a belief that develops among financiers that everyone should have a really lean team. A big team is basically tantamount to bloat, and you shouldn't have that. And does that affect the way a founder tries to impress a VC and convince them that they're doing the right thing regarding teams? Is it just you've got to be cheap as possible, or is it more about proving the value out? Is what does it look like?
No, that I from what I'm seeing right now, it's a combination of all of that. So there are companies that are being formed, and I think it's going to be interesting to see, can you build a unicorn company with three employees because you've vibe coded the entire back end and you've just automated through some variation of ChatGPT, Perplexity, some LLM that you don't need the overhead. Now, that's like a nirvana. And you've seen companies like Cursor doing really well in that space. And there's another company, I think it's the letter N8N out of Europe, that's doing some really innovative stuff on a really flat org structure. But as an investor, that is a huge consideration about cash burn, because if cash is always going to be king, so if I'm bootstrapping this, I do want to be as lean as possible. I want to use as much technology as possible to help me get there. And think about a go-to-market strategy. Gone are the days of a BDR strapped to a phone trying to pump out 75 calls a day. That method isn't working. So you're trying to use a lot more AI automation so you can actually increase the number of touch points that you make in a day. So ultimately, you can start lean, but you have to think about what is the best selling mechanism and what is my cash runway? Because if I ask for too little cash from my investor, I'm going to have to stay super lean. And if I ask for too much, that could pose a number of other problems. So there's that fine balance between finding the right level of staff and then that right level of cash.
Now, in terms of building stuff, on the flip side, the company as it relates to the marketplace, do you have any insights on what you think VCs are interested in now? Of course, they're interested in AI, but are there any nuanced aspects of that?
It's going to come back to what's defensible, what is unique, and how do you go ahead and set yourself apart? So one of the founders that I'm working with, really smart guy in Colorado, his company is called Propulsion AI. His website is Get Propulsion AI, and he's actually rethinking the way in which job descriptions are being created. You're like, job description, I can go to ChatGPT and hammer out a job description pretty quickly. He's coming at it from most job descriptions read like obituaries, and he wants it to be much more about performance based. So if I were to say, Thomas, 30% of your job is this, these are the outputs that I want. I'm not going to tell you at a task level. I'm going to say, I want you to turn this out. So he's actually built his own set of proprietary data. He is not a wrapper. He actually has built an LLM to go ahead and help this. So for him, trying to get investors over that hump, so they appreciate the uniqueness. And he's been invited to participate in some competitions in the state of New York at a VC, where if he's the winner, he'll actually get $1 million in funding and then become an entrepreneur in residency with some of the other winners. So that's where they're like, what's your uniqueness? How do you go ahead and go big in a space? So that's one of the lenses that I'm definitely seeing. The other one is around this notion of workforce orchestration. So right now, that is one of the last things that has not been automated. And so if you think about the layers, like we've got all these layers for infrastructure. We've got all these layers around technology, but really going ahead and identifying people and skills is an untapped market right now. So there's a lot of interest in that, and where you're moving away from what you said you could do on your resume to, no, I'm going to give you a skills assessment, and I'm going to go ahead and use that as the leveling agent to be able to go ahead and say, are you who you say you are, and can you show what your capabilities are? Because as we all know, you can put anything you want on your resume.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff. Now, how do you engage? And what exactly do you offer to founders? Who are the folks who should see you the most? And how do you engage?
So for me, I start with my core strengths in the finance strategy world, but it very quickly morphs into, let's do a full diagnostic of the business. Let's talk about how we can optimize our sales process, how we can optimize marketing. And one of my other sort of simple questions is, what has to be true over the next 30, 60, 90 days for this to come together? And just breaking it down to say, all right, I can build you a plan, but let's just talk about the factors. I want $1 million in sales by the end of July. I'm like, okay, possible, but what has to be true for all of that to come together? And if you've got two customers in the pipeline, like, it's going to be super hard to go ahead and get there. So that's a lens where I'll come in and really help them do a 360 of what's going on.
Gotcha. So out of this discovery conversation that a founder has with you, you're helping them see the table in front of them, what's really there. And here's where you, at that core, the finance knowledge, but then all the massive amount of experience from wearing the other hats, here's where you're going to have the most serious need for value that you can offer. So in particular, as things relate to finance. So if someone's a founder, and they're either in a precarious situation finance-wise, or the roadmap that they're looking at, they just want to make sure that they can secure it. So just anything, making sure that they have that existential hopefulness that you help them get there.
Exactly. It's also being like a thought partner as well. So I don't come at it with just a finance lens. I am your, at times, your COO. I'm your sounding board. So I tell people that
Yeah.
as my role in your org is to give you both filtered and unfiltered advice about the state of the business. So that unfiltered advice could be like just that very simple, we're going in the wrong direction. And being able to just have that open and honest conversation. And then there's that more filtered advice around you have to help people understand the journey and take them on that journey. And that's really an art. The other big piece that I do is storytelling. I often tell people that I am as much of a CFO as a professional storyteller. And going ahead and building a presentation that takes an entire audience through a series of steps to understand where we are and where we're going. And I'll tell you my quick hack for that is I tell the story backwards. So instead of saying, once upon a time, Thomas, this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened, because we're all distracted these days, you got Slack, you've got your phone buzzing, you've got all these different things. My trick is I actually tell the story backwards. The opening slide is, over the next 6 months, this is the course of business that we're going to go down. These are the outputs that we're going to see. And I'm going to use the next four slides to unpack these assumptions so you can tell me where you think I'm going in the wrong direction. So that this way, I've already set them up front for this is so where I'm going and where we need to go ahead and find any difference of opinion.
So they get the orientation around the destination,
Correct.
then the conversation's about how are we aiming to get there and how are we heading there. Oh, I love
Correct.
that. Excellent. Yeah, so for listeners out there who want to check you out and have a conversation with you, what's the best way for them to contact you?
The best way to contact me would be either via LinkedIn. I do post content daily on topics related to finance and what it's like to interact with different founders and thought pieces that founders should be thinking of. The other best way is via email. That would either be at my last name, Dillmeyer at outlook.com is probably the best way to get in contact with me.
Because you'll definitely read it. Yeah, there's some email accounts we have. I'll read it if it lands here, and I might not otherwise. But okay, LinkedIn and then your email. Excellent. So hopefully folks check all of that stuff out. Bill, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much, Tom. It's really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you for tuning in. Join us next time on Product-Led Growth Leaders. Take care.